Music Doodoo Classical Bedtime presents Richard Wagner and the Gold Beneath the River. Listen. Deep, deep down. Below the fish, below the boats, at the very bottom of the muddy River Rhine, something is waking up. A single, low note is humming in the dark, growing, spreading, like a secret that's been kept for a thousand years. More notes join in, rippling upward like bubbles rising to the surface. The river is coming alive. This is how Richard Wagner began the biggest musical adventure anyone had ever attempted. 4 operas, 15 hours, 1 cursed ring of gold. And tonight, we're going to dive right in. Richard Wagner had a problem. Actually, he had many problems, but this was the biggest one. He wanted to tell stories that were too big for any normal theatre. Stories with gods who throw lightning bolts, giants who shake mountains, dragons breathing fire, warrior maidens riding horses through storm clouds. Regular opera houses were tiny boxes with squeaky wooden stages. The orchestra sat right in front of everyone, blocking the view. The gas lights stayed on the whole time so people could chat with their neighbours. Wagner hated all of this. "If no theatre in the world is good enough for my music," he declared, "then I shall simply have to build one myself." Everyone thought he was mad. But Wagner didn't care. He had a vision, and nothing, nothing would stop him from bringing it to life. But before we go any further, we need to understand what an opera actually is. An opera is a play where nobody just talks. Everyone sings. The actors sing their conversations. They sing when they're happy. They sing when they're sad. They sing when they're fighting dragons or falling in love or scheming evil schemes. It sounds strange, doesn't it? Imagine singing, "Please pass the potatoes" at dinner. But here's the magical thing. When words become music, they carry more feeling. A singer can hold one note for 10 whole seconds, letting you feel their heartbreak or joy in a way that just talking never could. And Wagner didn't write short operas. His Ring Cycle is 4 enormous operas, all connected, telling one gigantic story. 15 hours of music. That's like watching 7 movies back to back. The story begins at the bottom of the River Rhine. 3 beautiful water spirits called the Rhine Maidens swim through the green depths guarding a treasure. A lump of magical gold sitting on a rock, glowing softly in the murky water. An ugly little dwarf named Alberic comes crawling along the riverbed. He wants the gold. But the Rhine Maidens laugh at him. "You can have the gold," they giggle, "but only if you give up love forever. Who would do something so foolish?" Alberic would. He curses love, snatches the gold, and disappears into the darkness to forge it into a ring. A ring of power. And as he vanishes, he screams a terrible curse. "Whoever wears this ring will be destroyed by it." Now, here is where Wagner did something incredibly clever, something that changed music forever. He invented a special trick called a Leitmotif. That's a German word that means leading theme. And it works like this. Every important person, place, or thing in the story gets their own little piece of music, their own musical name tag. Whenever that character appears, or even when someone just mentions them, their music plays. The ring has a leitmotif. Wotan, the king of the gods, has one. The sword has one. Love has one. Fire has one. It's like Wagner hid secret clues in the music. If you're paying attention, you can hear the story before it happens. A character might be talking about something completely different, but if you hear the ring's dark, creeping theme underneath, uh-oh, trouble is coming. In the next piece, listen for how Wagner weaves different melodies together, layering them like voices in a conversation. Each melody could be a different character, all speaking at once. Could you hear them? Those different melodies dancing around each other, sometimes clashing, sometimes joining together in harmony. That's Wagner's genius. In the Ring cycle, he does this with over 90 different leitmotifs, 90 musical characters, all woven together into one enormous tapestry of sound. Now, back to our story. The gods are in trouble. Wotan, the king of the gods, lives in a magnificent castle called Valhalla. But Wotan made a terrible deal. He promised to pay the giants who built Valhalla by giving them Freya, the goddess of youth. Without Freya, the gods will grow old and weak. Wotan needs something else to pay the giants, something valuable enough to trade. The ring. He steals it from Alberic. But as the dwarf loses his treasure, the curse begins its work. And now we leap forward to the second opera and the most famous music Wagner ever wrote. Get ready, because we're about to ride through a thunderstorm on flying horses.
The Valkyries, Wotan's 9 warrior daughters, riding through the sky on flying horses, collecting the souls of fallen heroes and carrying them to Valhalla. Listen for the brass instruments, the trumpets and horns. They aren't just playing notes, they are galloping. You'll hear the heavy thud of hooves hitting the clouds and the whoosh of wind as the Valkyries dive toward the earth. And those high voices calling out. Those are the Valkyries themselves, crying their battle call across the mountains. Did you feel like you were flying? The wind in your hair, the clouds rushing past. But the Valkyrie opera isn't just about battle cries and flying horses. It's also about a father and his daughter. Wotan's favourite Valkyrie is Brunhilde. She's brave and strong, and she loves her father dearly. But when Brunhilde disobeys Wotan's orders, choosing to help someone he told her to abandon, the king of the gods must punish her. He cannot let her remain a Valkyrie. He must put her into an enchanted sleep on a mountaintop, surrounded by a ring of magic fire. In the next piece, listen for the tenderness beneath the sorrow. A father saying goodbye to his child, knowing he may never see her again.
Whoever wakes you, Wotan tells her through his tears, must be braver than I am. He kisses his daughter's eyes closed. He lays her gently on the rock. He calls up magical fire to surround her, a wall of flame that only a true hero would dare to cross. And then the king of the gods turns away and walks down the mountain alone. Listen to how the music aches. This is a father's heart breaking.
The third opera is called Siegfried, after its hero, a young man who has never learnt to be afraid. Siegfried is Wotan's grandson, though he doesn't know it. He was raised in the forest by a scheming dwarf, and he's never met another human being. He's wild and reckless and incredibly strong. And in this opera, he faces a dragon. Listen closely to this next piece. Can you hear the heavy, rumbling sounds in the lowest instruments? The tubas and bass trombones growling like something massive breathing in the dark. That's Fafnir, a giant who transformed himself into a dragon using the ring's dark magic. He guards his treasure in a cave, and smoke curls from his nostrils as he sleeps. Defeats the dragon. And afterward, a little forest bird tells him a wonderful secret. There's a beautiful woman asleep on a mountaintop, surrounded by fire, waiting for a hero brave enough to rescue her. Siegfried doesn't hesitate. He climbs the mountain, walks straight through the flames. He's never learnt to be afraid of anything. And finds Brunhilde sleeping under her shield. He kisses her, she wakes, and for one brief, shining moment, everything is perfect. This tender music is called the Siegfried Idyll. Wagner actually wrote it as a birthday present for his wife. He hired musicians to play it on the stairs outside her bedroom while she slept, so she would wake up to the sound of love. Remember how I told you Wagner wanted to build his own theatre? Well, he actually did it. He convinced a king, King Ludwig of Bavaria, who adored his music, to help him build a brand new opera house in a small town called Bayreuth. Not a fancy city theatre, but a special building hidden away on a green hill, designed only for Wagner's operas. The orchestra pit was hidden under the stage, so the sound floated up mysteriously from nowhere. The seats rose steeply like a Greek amphitheatre, so everyone had a perfect view. And the lights went completely dark during performances, which was shocking and new in those days. Wagner wanted nothing to distract you from his musical world. When you sat in that theatre, he wanted you to forget you were sitting in a chair at all. He wanted you to become part of the story. And in August 1876, his dream finally came true. The complete Ring Cycle was performed for the very first time. Thank you. The fourth and final opera is called Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods. And it is the saddest part of all. Siegfried, our brave hero, is tricked by evil schemers. A magic potion makes him forget Brunhilde completely. He gives the ring to someone else. He is betrayed by people he trusted. And in the end, Siegfried is killed. A spear in the back from someone he thought was his friend. The music you're about to hear is called Siegfried's Funeral March. When it was first performed, people in the audience wept openly. But here's what makes it extraordinary. Remember the leitmotifs? In this march, Wagner weaves together every theme connected to Siegfried. His heroic melody, the theme of his magical sword, the music of his parents' love, even the shadow of the cursed ring, all tangled together in one final goodbye. Listen for them. Listen for the ghosts of everything Siegfried ever was. After Siegfried dies, Brunhilde finally understands everything. The curse on the ring, how the gods have failed, what must be done to set things right. She builds a great funeral fire for Siegfried. She takes the ring, that terrible, beautiful ring that has brought nothing but sorrow, and places it on her own finger. And then, surrounded by flames, she rides her horse straight into the fire. The flames rise higher and higher. They spread beyond the pyre. They reach all the way to Valhalla itself. The home of the gods begins to burn. And then the River Rhine floods its banks. Cool, clean water rushes over the flames, over the ashes, over the cursed ring. The Rhine maidens rise from the water and take back their gold at last. The curse is broken. The old world of gods and heroes is washed away. And in the quiet that follows, something new might begin. Thank you.
music you just heard, those waves of sound rising and falling like water, like breathing, like the end of a long, long dream. That's how Wagner closes his story. Not with a crash, not with a battle cry, but with something that sounds almost like relief. Like the whole world exhaling after holding its breath for 15 hours. Wagner worked on the Ring cycle for 26 years. He was 35 when he started and 61 when he finished. He fought with kings and creditors. He was exiled from his own country. He nearly gave up a dozen times. But he never stopped believing in his impossible dream. And in the end, he built his theatre on the hill, and he filled it with gods and dragons and a river of gold. You know, almost 150 years later, Wagner's theatre is still there. Every summer, people travel from all over the world to sit in those same seats and watch the Ring cycle performed just as Wagner imagined it. Four operas, four evenings, 15 hours of music. And still, after all this time, audiences gasp when the dragon appears. They cry when Siegfried falls. They hold their breath as the flames consume Valhalla and the river rises. The next time you hear grand, sweeping music in a film, the next time a villain has their own theme song, the next time music makes you feel like you've stepped into another world entirely, remember the stubborn German composer who spent half his life dreaming of gold beneath a river. Sweet dreams. And may your own impossible dreams come true. One note at a time.